Welcome to Off Court, the business of sport podcast, where business and sports culture meet. Let's go. Kick it off, Robbie.
Alrighty, welcome to the Off Court podcast. And we're jumping into a little bit of a special edition this episode. And we're covering NFTs. And look, you're probably on either side. You're probably, you know, joining Discord and whitelist and so forth. And, you know, already right amongst it. Already, I suppose, part of the NFT community. Or on the other side, potentially, you're thinking, well, what is it actually? You know, and I've got no doubt you've seen it around, but perhaps you've got some questions about how it works and how it's kind of shaping many industries, I suppose. And we're very lucky to have Greg Oakford with us, as he's the co-founder of NFT Fest Australia, and he is right amongst it. So welcome, Greg.
Thanks, Robbie. Good to be here chatting all things NFTs.
Yeah, mate. We were just talking off air and, you know, I was just like, we should have been recording this because this is good content. So if that's just scratching the surface, I'm pretty excited about, you know, what we're going to be talking about today. But I suppose give us a little bit of an introduction, you know, for yourself and how you kind of got started in it.
Yeah, thanks. NFT obsessed. I mean, it's captured my imagination from, I probably found out about the acronym NFTs, I would say about this time 12 months ago. A buddy of mine is the CEO of Blockchain Australia. He was dragging me along to a few events back in 2016, 17, 18, like crypto events and blockchain events. And, you know, I was definitely open-minded. I remember listening to the term smart contract on Tim Ferriss' podcast back in 2017 with Naval and Nick Szabo. And I sort of thought, you know, this is interesting, but I didn't really quite grasp the concept. I just didn't have the bandwidth, or more importantly, I just didn't make it a priority to jump into the sort of space and learn a little bit more post-podcast. I wish I did. You know, it wasn't until really mid-2020 I made my first crypto investment. And, you know, that was sort of still during the quote-unquote bear market. And then, you know, in early 2021 or even late 2020, I was, you know, I'm a big basketball guy, probably similar to yourself, Robbie, big sports nut in general. And I'd seen sort of NBA Top Shot pop up on Twitter. And I sort of was thinking, oh, I think these are digital collectibles, but I hadn't really understood that they were backed by sort of blockchain technology, which creates provenance. And yeah, in February, I read a Forbes article, ironically, that was featuring, I can't remember her name now, which is really bad, but it was a woman leading up the NBA's Top Shot, you know, and with Dapper Labs and Flow. And I sort of thought, what is this? This is like sort of my basketball cards collecting days reincarnated, but digitally. And I sent a screenshot of this article to Steve, and I said, what is this, NFTs? And he said, they're blowing up, bro, you should check them out. And since that moment, to be honest, it's probably overtaken my life. I've just been absolutely down the rabbit hole. Nothing has captured my imagination more in my entire life than NFTs. I think they would just fit everything I'm about, and sort of I'm just super excited about all the use cases that we haven't even discovered yet. And I just feel it in my bones. I've felt it in my bones probably for the last 6 months. It's going to be a space that I'll play in for a decade plus.
It's interesting that, you know, you heard about NFTs 12 months ago, and now, as you said, it's just so ingrained in your life. And how early are we in the NFT space? Because obviously there's a lot of, you know, as you just said, there's a lot of use cases that we don't know about yet in terms of what's going to be capable. But where are we in the space right now?
Yeah, so the best way I think I could put it is, you know, we talk about the term Web3, right? And I think it's a really great rebrand that sort of happened. It didn't necessarily happen in 2021, but I think 2021 brought the term to the surface. So rather than people thinking crypto, for whatever reason, I think crypto in general has got a branding issue, or at least it did have a branding issue. I think as time goes on and we now see sort of the likes of, you know, FTX and crypto.com, et cetera, sort of sponsoring every major sport around the sort of globe, you're going to see a shift that the brand of the word crypto will move from less scammy to more just reality of what we do in our everyday lives. But I think Web3 was a great rebrand that, and you know, what I classify Web3 is sort of like underneath that umbrella is you've got cryptocurrency that sort of powers orchestrates all of the new iteration of the internet. You've also got NFTs, you've got DAOs, you've got all these terms that sort of, in my mind, fit under the Web3 umbrella. So back to your original question, in terms of context, I think, you know, I'm not sure how old your viewers are, Robbie, but, you know, Web 1 sort of being the rise of the internet, websites and sort of e-commerce, I think we're probably in 1995, 1996 right now, where there's sites maybe like NBA.com, if you're a big basketball fan, starting to pop up. And you're like, what is this? I can go read an article about NBA on this internet thing, right? Using dial-up internet. You know, maybe we're even in like 97. I don't know. You know, people are talking about, I'll never put my credit card in the internet ever again. Like, I can remember asking my mum for her credit card to buy things on the internet, and she actually let me. I think she was a little bit more open-minded to probably many parents at the time, or just individuals that had a credit card. And then if we look at it in sort of a Web 2 context, I think we're probably in 2006 or seven. Like, I remember I was in college in the US in 2006, seven, and I got a Facebook account when it was only open to Americans that were at college, right? You needed a college email address. So mine was like .lmu.edu, right? And that's how you got a Facebook account. Then they opened it up to the rest of the world, like staggered it. I think it was around the end of 2006, start of 2007, right? So that's probably the time frame I think we're in. Twitter's just starting to sort of make its name for itself, or, you know, pop up. And people are saying, like I said to you offline before, Robbie, it's the same cycle that we're seeing. The people that are saying NFTs are a fad right now are the same people that said, I'll never tweet about what I had for breakfast because that's the dumbest stuff ever, right? Like, it's just, it's this cycle over and over again. And the same people that said, I'll never put my credit card into the internet in the mid 90s, right? So that's where I think we are right now. I think we're in 1995, 96 in a Web 1 context, and we're in 2006, 2007 in a Web 2 context. And for those wondering what the hell is Web 2, we're essentially talking social media platforms there. One way to frame it, I'll give one last point, and, you know, I certainly won't claim that this is my sort of tweet, but I saw a tweet about 6 months ago, and I think it was by a guy named Jimmy McNeilis, but Chris Dixon, who's a pretty prominent Web3 figure on Twitter, either retweeted it or put it out as his own, I can't remember. But ultimately, Web1 was read, right? We read websites. Web2 with social media was read and write. We were able to read content, and we were able to produce our own content, writing content. Web3 with NFTs is read, write, and own. So we can now own a piece of the internet, essentially.
So I'll put this to you then on that scale in regards to some of the references to, you know, social media and Web 2. When do you think it will become mainstream? Because now it's, you know, I don't have the numbers, but it's generally a small percentage of people or early adopters that are really getting amongst it now. At what point does it become mainstream? When things like, you know, tickets to go to an event are all NFT or blockchain. What's your prediction on that?
I think it'll happen faster than we expect. And the reason being is Web 1 and Web 2 still exist, right? So when social media first come onto the scene, it was quite foreign, right? It was sort of like, what is this stuff? And if you wanted to learn to it, you might have needed to go to like a Reddit, you know, subreddit blog or something like that. And in Web 3, we still have the luxury of having Web 1 and Web 2. So despite, you know, us calling this stuff Web 3, which is, we're still using Web 2 to sort of amplify the messages. You know, Twitter is sort of almost like the town hall hub of, you know, we call it crypto Twitter, right? And Discord, the same thing, right? Web 2 platform. So I think it's going to accelerate faster than we think. Mainstream, I find hard to sort of define these days because, you know, you've got podcasts that get bigger audiences than sort of quote unquote traditional sort of radio shows and TV shows. And, you know, in terms of, I suppose, mainstream events, like I've seen two things in the last 24 hours that would potentially indicate we're already there, but I think we're not there in terms of adoption of people actually having wallets. But those two events were Coachella, right? So I've never been to Coachella. I'd love to go one day, but they are announcing, or they did announce NFT, a Coachella NFT, which will be on the FTX marketplace with Solana, run by the Solana blockchain or backed by the Solana blockchain. And they'll be issuing a certain amount of NFTs that will be lifetime passes to go to Coachella, as well as amazing sort of digital artwork that also crosses over with physical prints. So some of their other lower tier NFTs will be, you buy the NFT, it will sit in your wallet, in what's called your sort of NFT or your crypto wallet. That will be the new iteration of social media, right? So like right now, everyone's sort of doing candid photos on Instagram saying, look, I'm at Coachella, and that will probably still happen. But the new flex or the new way to sort of show yourself online will be, look what's in my NFT wallet. I own one of these one of 100 rare Coachella digital NFTs. That's this amazing digital artwork that is from the 2005 event. And I've got the physical print hanging up in my home as well, right? So there's one example. The other one is, I just saw something before and I haven't dug into this, but the Super Bowl in a week and a half, everyone's ticket is going to be an NFT. So if you attend the Super Bowl, it's going to be an NFT, right? So those little moments in my mind are going to do wonders for the sort of broader adoption of NFTs, because ultimately everything in my mind that's sort of valuable to someone is going to be an NFT, right? So the ticket stubs that we grew up with going to concerts and sporting events are not going to be a printed ticket with faded ink. They're going to be a beautifully crafted digital experience, essentially, that will be a keepsake for you. And if you were following what happened a couple of months ago, Michael Jordan's original ticket stub from his first game in 1984 went for like $200,000 or $300,000. So you could only imagine, you know, if this Super Bowl goes down in history as one of the best games ever or whatever, it might be in 3 years, might be in 5 years, it might be in 50 years, you might sell that ticket stub for a lot of money.
Super, super interesting. I want to put this out to you. So from my perspective, like, I'm probably in the middle of the two kind of audiences that I mentioned before, where, you know, I'm reasonably around what's happening, but I'm not fully into it yet. But I can see a number of projects that I've followed where I find it difficult to wrap my head around the actual practicality of the project other than being something cool. Now, I know there's the collector's aspect of it. That's obviously changed a whole industry. But where the extra kind of experience where, okay, if we can get a certain number of people into it, we can buy a yacht for everyone to have a party once a year, which is like, all right, that's funny. That's cool. Where people are actually creating communities around something, you know, generally more specific than that. But my question to you is, why would someone buy an NFT in the collectible space? So not necessarily something like a ticket where it's an NFT, something where they're buying into a community generally, and assuming it is like a collection, why would someone do that?
It's a great question. And there's an enormous amount of noise right now, right? Even from the time that I sort of started getting into it, there was only a couple of projects a week that you sort of had to get across, or just, you know, at least research, right? I didn't jump into everything, but at least to sort of kick the tires or have a look, right? I can't even keep up right now. Like, there's that much noise, right? But within that noise, there are a few projects that, you know, people think have good founders, and they're ultimately trying to build a brand, I would say to you, Robbie. Like, now, whether they're actually successful in the long term, like, there's no doubt in my mind that many, 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 if not all NFTs right now that you see on OpenSea, or you see the, you know, the big dollar figures going for, are overpriced, right? There's a lot of promise. There's a lot of sort of hype around, like, well, this is going to be the next Disney, or this is going to be the next Hello Kitty, or this is going to be the next Pokemon that was born out of the blockchain. Now, those statements are massive statements, right? They're very audacious statements from projects and owners and founders, etc. And people sort of jump in, right? And it's very easy to jump in. You just have your laptop in front of you and you sort of get swept up in the hype. The interesting thing about it, though, is for a very select few, that is actually going to come true, right? Like, there are going to be brands born out of NFTs, right? It's just which ones, right? So at the moment, it's very easy to think, well, the one I'm in is going to be the one, right? And, you know, I'm in a few projects and I have no idea. Like, I don't know what it looks like in 6-12 months, let alone 6-12 years. But I think to answer your question, people are buying brands, right? So another example, like, they're buying the promise of it being a brand. So let's think about The Simpsons, right? If the next Simpsons is Cool Cats or Doodles or one of these other projects, right? And you had the Homer Simpson of The Simpsons, right? Back in sort of the late 80s, early 90s. In the physical collectible market right now, that would be worth a lot of money, I'm sure, right? So that is sort of the promise. That is the promise to a degree that we are going to be the next Disney or The Simpsons or whatever. But back to my original point, there's a lot of high valuations on these tokens and there's a lot of hype. So you do need to be careful that you don't get caught. And, you know, I'm not the only one that says this, but you've got to essentially, if you are going to kick the tires of some of these projects, and just essentially get involved and sort of see what's happening and just spend money that you can afford to lose, right? Like, people are going to get themselves in trouble if they're spending 30, 40 grand on something just because it's hit 10 ETH and they think it's going to be the next Bored Ape or whatever. If that goes down to 1 ETH or 0.5 ETH, there's going to be some tears.
So I take that a large number of people are doing this as an investment, right?
Yeah, oh, no doubt. I think that, yes. I think people thinking it's quick crypto gains. And the hard thing about it is there is money to be made and some people are making money, but a lot of people are not. It's just probably the nature of the beast right now. There are some high quality projects out there most likely, but you know, people say do your own research. I think unfortunately people hear that and they think, well, I'll do 30 minutes of YouTube watching and I'll read one blog and one Twitter thread and now I'm ready. Like I can tell you, like, you know, you need to spend an ungodly amount of time to actually be able to move the noise out and get to the sort of signal. I think if people come into it with the thought of, I just want to get involved and learn, and I would encourage people to like buy an NFT because it's otherwise you're going to sit on the sidelines. Like even if it's just a low value NFT, if you sit on the sidelines, you most likely will just find content and articles that tell you or back you up that why it's not a good thing to do, right? But if you actually put $50 in or $100 or whatever and just buy a project, get into a project, get into the Discord, understand how it works, understand that maybe you get a future airdrop from that project or you get a future whitelist opportunity to go into another project and sort of understand, oh, I own this token. So the founders and the project can add value to me should they wish because I own that token. And when you sort of have that penny drop moment, it helps accelerate your learning curve rather than just finding 17 articles that tell you why NFTs are a fad, which in my view is the equivalent of finding 17 articles back in 1995 or 1996 telling you why the internet was going to be a fad. That's my thoughts.
So what are the opportunities then in the NFT space? Because I don't know if I would compare it to gold rush necessarily, but you know, the saying where, you know, you got to sell shovels in a gold rush. What are some of the broader opportunities, I suppose, a little bit from a business perspective, maybe like, where do you see it going? Is it the technology that you'd be working on? Is it certain practical use cases? Is there a particular sort of, you know, generalized opportunities that you see in the space?
Absolutely. I think it depends on what you're looking for, right? If you're a creative person right now listening to this show, I would say dig into some, you know, and it's going to take you some time, right? We're all most, I would assume most of your listeners are reasonably astute internet users, right? So you will have some level of competency to flesh out what is shilling content on YouTube and Twitter, etc., and what is a little bit more, you know, a little bit more useful to you. So if you're creative, there's a massive opportunity with NFTs, right? For the first time, you can sort of go direct to consumer. If you're an artist or a music artist or a photographer or whoever you might be, you know, I can see a few pieces of art in the background of your screen, Robbie. Like if you can punch out good art and create, you know, a little bit of a community around your art, you know, you can sell your pieces or you might even give them away for free, but build in a royalty. So if they're sold on the secondary market, right, like you might take 10, 20% of every sale that's sold on the secondary market. And I think start small is my advice too. Like if you're an artist, don't just come in thinking, oh, I'm just going to, you know, make something, get 50 grand, 100 grand and hightail out of here. Like have a longer term mentality because this is really a gold rush for an artist, right? You have a better line and a better economic model with NFTs than ever before in history. And, you know, the other thing I would say is, you know, if you're a little bit more of an investor, back to your shovel sort of point, Robbie, like maybe you want to take a look at the blockchains themselves, right? Like we probably don't have a lot of time today to get into the technicalities of sort of layer one blockchains, layer twos, etc. But ultimately, it's what these NFT platforms are being built on, right? And what underpins cryptocurrency are the blockchains. So, you know, Ethereum is still by far the biggest blockchain in terms of where the NFT traffic is, but we do see a little bit of traffic now on a blockchain called Tezos. I know that they did a deal with Warner Music just a couple of days ago around music NFTs. So maybe you want to Google something around Tezos. Obviously, this is not financial advice. I'm just sort of telling you what's happening in the land. And then, you know, Solana, I just mentioned Coachella then, you know, Solana is sort of dabbling in NFTs. And there's many other blockchains that are trying to play in the NFT space, but also in the DeFi space too. I don't think we'll touch too much on DeFi, and it's certainly not my area of expertise. You know, then you look at layer two solutions, right? So for those that are aware of Gary Vaynerchuk, he had an NFT project called Book Games that dropped a couple of weeks ago, and he utilized a platform called Immutable X, which is a layer 2 solution for Ethereum. Now, Immutable X is actually a startup out of Sydney. So they're an Australian company that are doing pretty big things. And, you know, they're essentially betting on NFT traffic remains on, you know, the bulk of the traffic remains on Ethereum for the years and decades to come. And, you know, their difference, their point of difference to regular Ethereum is you're not paying what's called a gas fee, right? Which is a transaction fee. So I probably won't get into the technicalities of a layer two solution right now, Robbie, because I don't think that will be overly beneficial to your audience. But, you know, I think it really, back to your original question, it comes down to what are you interested in, right? Like NFTs caught my mind because I like collectibles. I like culture. We see, you know, NFTs crossing over more than anything else with sort of celebrity culture and just general everyday culture, right? Like even the slang terms that we use on sort of crypto Twitter, you know, that is building a new culture, right? So that sort of caught my attention. But if you're more on sort of the investing side with the shovels, like you said, maybe you want to look at some of the protocols. And if you're an artist, whether again, you know, musician, photographer, whatever, have a look at how you sort of build out an NFT and what that looks like.
I've got a friend actually who is an extremely talented digital artist and, you know, fell into NFTs by chance and he's just absolutely killing it. He's a very wanted man in the space. You know, he gets literally multiple inquiries a day now from kind of organizations looking to utilize his talents. And obviously there's huge financial benefits when it goes well. And yeah, it's obviously a huge opportunity for not only artists, but I think, you know, as the use cases start to grow as well for, you know, across industries, it's going to become obviously a lot more prevalent and there's going to be a lot more opportunities that perhaps are more mainstream. But as far as the sports aspects go with NFTs, sports licensing is obviously a big one in general. And I know you would be around that. Is it prevalent now in NFTs? Like is sports licensing even the right term for NFTs? When say an organization or a company goes to, you know, just totally example goes to the NFL and say, we're going to license, you know, the teams or whatever and create NFTs. Is that prevalent?
Yeah, I think sports is ripe for the picking. And we saw, you know, I didn't mention off the top, but my background is in sports, right? So I worked in basketball and golf, most recently at Golf Australia. I'm in sort of a marketing digital role, really doing mainly Web 2 things. And, you know, I sort of have seen for sort of 12, 14 years what's behind curtain in the sports world. And I think there's enormous opportunity. There are some sort of nuanced difficulties that people are going to have to work through depending on what sport it is. You know, for golf and tennis, for instance, you've got all these tours and different tournaments and then the players, you know, managed individually. And it's a little bit harder sometimes than sort of team sports. But look, all of that stuff will be worked through. We saw recently, and for anyone that's interested, you know, I did a little bit of a write-up on the AO Art Ball, which is the Australian Open NFT project on my LinkedIn. Or you can find it on Twitter at Greg Oakford if you want to have sort of just a brief overview of what that project looked like. But I think that one has really set the stage of blurring the lines of in real life benefits as well as digital benefits, right? So from a fan engagement perspective, what they did is they issued, I think it was 6,776 NFTs, and they're all these cool little sort of tennis balls in like what looked like a sort of glass case. And that was your NFT, and they had rarities to them, and they sort of had, you know, different color patterns and schemes, sort of similar to some of the projects we were talking about before, Robbie, from a generative art perspective. But the difference with this project was they linked that art ball to a spot on the court, which was 19 centimeters by 19 centimeters, right? So if you're spot on the court and mine just missed, right, probably by 1 or 2 centimeters, the person next to me got it, but I had a spot pretty close to the baseline. And if a match winning point, one of the 400 plus match winning points happened during the tournament, your NFT would be upgraded with a match winning point. So it look a little bit different. It has a point of differential from other NFTs, right, in the project, but even cooler with the championship points, right? So there's 11 championship points. If you got the Ash Barty one on Saturday night, you actually get the physical tennis ball of the match winning point sent to you, right? The physical, right? So people that are confusing everything to be digital only, we are going to see an absolute influx of blurring the lines in NFT projects that is digital and physical. It's not one or the other, it's both, right? In many instances. So that project in my mind, and you know, they did a big Decentraland build in the metaverse and sort of had Steve Aoki and a couple of other high level sort of musicians, DJs play within that metaverse environment. And I think those metaverse environments are still quite new. They're still quite green, right? Like you go and there's not a lot of people in there, but what sports are going to be able to do in the future, you know, if I liken it to, I don't know, basketball, right? Like you might have, whether it's NBA, NBL, you might have one of the players or coaches speaking at in Decentraland or in the sandbox or whatever, one of these metaverses, right? It might be exclusive Q&A with the coach or the player that's a day before the game or an hour before the game or whatever it might be. And they're just beamed in essentially on a laptop or a phone and you're hanging out with your friends in Decentraland and, you know, you're getting this exclusive content because you own a certain NFT, right? From a concept perspective, like I guarantee you Steve Aoki will be doing this in the next sort of 12 to 18 months with the Aoki metaverse he's sort of building. But ultimately, you'll probably go to a Steve Aoki concert, right, in real life, and there'll be an event prior and post in sort of one of these metaverses, right? And if you can't get to the concert as well, because you're on the other side of the world, you can watch the concert in the metaverse and you can sort of be a part of it that way. And, you know, a few people look at that as a very dystopian type of world. And I don't, I think it's just a natural evolution of our digital experiences, right? Like, you know, everyone thought it was dystopian when we started live streaming on Facebook Live and Instagram Live and everyone freaked out saying, no one will ever go to a concert. When the reverse happened, everyone wanted to go to the concert to take a selfie and tag themselves in and sort of say, look how cool I am. I'm actually at the concert. So, you know, both worlds will exist. The digital world will exist. The physical world will exist. And the smart ones will find a really good crossover between those two worlds.
Definitely. I think that's really well said. And look, I think if you're on the fence, if you're listening and you're on the fence, it's time to jump in. And exactly as you said, Greg, it's time to spend some time and do your research and make sure you get your head around it, because this is definitely the future. And I think we're already starting to see it. So look, Greg, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. I think you've dropped some serious knowledge. And before we wrap up, where can sort of people find out a bit more about what you're doing and follow along the journey?
Yeah, Twitter's probably the best spot, at Greg Oakford. You can add me on LinkedIn too, but I feel like there's a lot of spam happening on LinkedIn now, so I'm a little bit hit and miss with accepting invites. But yeah, Twitter's probably the best place. The other one I'll give you is NFT Fest. So at NFT Fest Oz, being AUS, at NFT Fest Oz. We will be collaborating. My event, NFT Fest Australia, will be collaborating with Blockchain Australia in late March. Wednesday, the 23rd of March, will be the NFT Metaverse GameFi Day. So if this conversation has sparked your curiosity and you want to learn more, you can head on over to blockchainweek.com.au. I think that's the URL, or just go to the at NFT Fest Oz Twitter account. That will be a free event. You'll learn a lot there. And the last thing I would say is, if you're into podcasts, which most people would be if you're listening to this, I did do a Twitter thread that's pinned at the top of my Twitter page, which was my favorite and what I felt were the most valuable NFT podcasts of 2021. So there's 21 podcasts there to work your way through. Start with number one, though. I'll give you the alpha there. Start with number one.
Awesome. Thanks so much for your time, Greg. And I think we'll have to loop back in again to get another update from you.
Happy to. Thanks, Robbie.